Welcome to Working Dog Wednesday, only on the Fueled by Joy Working Dog Podcast. As always, we are brought to you by Joy Dog Food. I'm your host, Josh Michaelis. Remember, for more information about Joy Dog Food and to find a Joy dealer near you, visit joydogfood.com. Now, on to the show. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this week we have a throwback. It is our first conversation with a valuable member of our team now, Mr. Mike Green on Cottonville Road as we're sitting here talking Beagles. Once again, great episode. We really appreciate what Mike has done for the Fueled by Joy Working Dog Podcast, and we thought today would be a good time to revisit his initial interview here on the show. So sit back, relax, enjoy. We even got Maggie the Mutt coming up. So yeah, stay tuned.
Follow me around my hometown. She looked like a wolf. She laughed like a hyena. She cast no shadow on the ground. All the stray dogs in my neighborhood barked and howled as I passed by. But Maggie never showed me her teeth. She never left my side. Maggie the Mud is frightening someone for those that do not know. And Maggie the Mud ain't nothing but a reflection of my soul.
So let's take a quick minute to talk about Joy Dog Food. Now, I'm not going to talk about the quality of the product, how it's going to stack up just as good, if not better, than what you're feeding now. I'm not going to talk about all the things we do for dog sports and working dogs in general. I'm not going to talk about all the winners that are using Joy Dog Food, all the world champions and trucks and all that stuff that have been won on Joy Dog Food. Not even going to bring it up. What I want to talk about is how to get it. You want Joy Dog Food, go into your locally independent owned store. It could be a hardware store, a feed store, a farm and home. Heck, we've even sold feed out of a barber shop before. If they've got a storefront, we've got a distributor that can probably get them some dog food for you. We like to do business at the same place that you grew up in, that same little feed store that you bought your first pocket knife in and listened to your first hunting stories in. Those are the places that we like doing business. So go into that place, give them your business, give them our info, go to joydogfood.com. Our office number's on there. There's a contact us page. Depending on what region they're in, they will get in touch. They will get that dealer in touch with one of the sales reps who will get them some dog food. So that's who we want to do business with. That's how we want to sell dog food. We want to do it with American small business, with an American product. And we've been doing it since 1945 with no recalls. So go to joydogfood.com, go into that store, and let us help you get fueled by joy. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Fueled by Joy Working Dog Podcast. And today, I am lucky enough to be joined by Mr. Mike Green of, what is it, Cottonville Road Kennels, Mike?
Yes, sir.
Cottonville Road Kennels. And you've been a Joy customer for a while, and a good one, a loyal Joy customer. And I've noticed you talking about the feed and stuff like that. And Beagles have always intrigued me. I do like to hunt behind them and stuff like that. And from what I see, you got a few of them.
Yes, sir. I've got a few.
Yeah. How long have you been in the Beagles, Mike?
Well, I've been in it since, I'm a fourth generation Beagler. And my dad, he was a big influence in all of his buddies growing up. Mm-hmm. And so I've only been in my life probably about 6 years of my life without Beagles, and that was in my early career days when I was super, super busy. And so as far as that, I raised my first litter whenever I was just a young pup myself. So
you're a fourth generation. So your great great grandfather was a Beagler.
Yep.
Your grandfather, your father, and then you right behind him. You got any brothers or sisters?
Yeah, my brother. He's not an avid Beagler, but his son, my nephew, he is. And my two boys, one's 20 and one's 17 right now, they don't worry about dogs.
So. No, they're at that age right now. Maybe that'll come later down the road, huh?
Yeah.
So what, you're out in North Carolina, correct?
Yes, sir.
And that is, you know, I hear a lot of guys with Beagles and rabbit dogs out there in North Carolina. Is there a big Beagler culture out there where you're at?
It is. It really is. I'll tell you, Josh, it really is. There's a lot of guys just here from my house right now around me. I can think of about 10 different people that's got Beagles.
Really?
And then the county adjacent to us where I'm from, many guys that I went to school with and grew up with, they have Beagles and so on and so forth. It is part of our culture, really, in this part of the country to have running dogs, whether they be coonhounds, deer dogs, fox dogs, or Beagles. Not too many houses out in the country around here you go by and you don't see a dog pen with something in it.
Yeah. What's the terrain like that? Is it big country? Are you in the mountains? What are you in out there?
So here where we're at, I'm in the central part of North Carolina. So I'm actually what we call on the Uari Mountain chain.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically what we have here as far as terrain goes, I can cross over south and go into the sand flatlands, or I can go a little deeper than that and get into the swamp, or I can go back east and north a little bit and get into the more hilly country. Yeah. And then if I go directly north, I get up into Greensboro, Ridgeville, up in that direction. You get into more of the mountainous area, back towards the foothills. Of course, you'll get into it there.
Yeah.
It's a great place here to train Beagles. We have everything from cane cutters to swamp rabbits to cottontail. And
you're going to have to explain to me what a cane cutter is.
So a cane cutter is just
I'm just so you know, Mike, I'm borderline Yankee, so you're going to have to explain some stuff pretty slow and steady for me.
I completely understand. What we call a swamp rabbit around here is actually a blue tail. There's two different types of them.
Yeah.
Some people call them a mash rabbit or a marsh rabbit, depending on which end of the state you're on.
Mm-hmm.
And, they're just an old stinking swamp rabbit. They got old blue tail on them. They don't have a big fluffy white tail like a cottontail.
Really?
Yeah, they got we got two different breeds of them here, or should I say species. We got one with a small head, we got one with a big head. And that's how you decide which one is a marsh rabbit or what we call a blue tail or swamp rabbit. Huh. And then you got your cane cutter. You go down east a little ways from here, and you get into a cane cutter. Now, a cane cutter is considered a swamp rabbit, but it is just a big cottontail.
Really?
Yeah, you put it up beside a regular cottontail, and you'll say, well, it's a cottontail, but wow, it's big.
Huh.
And so that's what we call those. And then that's pretty much what we got. Pretty much covers all of our different species. My favorite one to run is the blue-tailed swamp rabbit.
What makes them so much fun?
Well, they will let you know what kind of rabbit dog you have. They are so hard to run.
Really?
They will climb trees. They will climb laps. They will swim water. They will swim up creek, down creek, across the pond. It whatever they've got to do to get rid of that pack of dogs, they will do. And it is so some days it's so aggro. You just want to go get on a regular cottontail and just run straight. You know,
Do they they make, are they bigger running rabbits? You know, are they making bigger circles, bigger loops? Are they kind of straight line runners, or are they just really methodical about how they get around?
Very methodical. They will run out 100 yards and double back on their track and run straight back into the dogs. I've seen them. This is the truth. And many of these guys around here will tell you the same. We've seen them literally run back straight towards the dogs, cut out to the left or right. And if the dog would just look over, he would be able to see the rabbit running back the other way.
Really?
Yeah, they are so slick. And they will jump stumps. They will climb stumps. I have seen so many over the years do so many tricks, but I really like to run them because, and the reason is they're my favorite, is because they will really let you know what kind of rabbit dog you have.
Yeah.
A cottontail. You jump him up. If it's during the rut, you know, he's going to run out there. He's going to take about a 200, 300 yard circle. Mm-hmm. It's going to be pretty good straight line running on a, you know, he'll come on back usually to where he's from, and then he'll make a few circles and then he'll do it again. A swamp rabbit, a blue tail, man, you don't never know where that rascal's going to end up.
Because all I've ever seen beagles run is just, because you're talking about cane cutters and big head swamp rabbits and all these different names and blue tails and stuff. I thought we just had cottontails. I thought that's what you had too. We got cottontails, and I've run a lot of cottontails behind beagles, you know, here in North Missouri. But we don't have the rabbits that you guys got, it don't sound like.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you up in that area, that's pretty much it. If you go back, I know if you go back towards Kentucky and stuff in that area, you'll get in what they call a hillbilly rabbit. I've never had the opportunity to actually run those, but from what I understand, they run a lot like a cottontail.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we've got some pretty slick rabbits down here, and then we've got a lot of pressure on them too, as far as from predators and stuff. And then we come in with the beagles and. I run year round. I tell people my season never goes out.
Mm-hmm.
And we just stay at it all the time, you know, running and training and doing, you know, several days a week throughout the year. So I see them in all their stages, from the rut, even when a doe's, I have little ones and how they run. And you can always tell when a doe's got little ones, because you'll jump her here and she'll run way over there somewhere and she'll start running circles, and it'll be tough on the dogs to keep her up, and then once she loses them, she'll come on back home.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'd like, you're gonna have to sit down with Seth Hall and just talk rabbits one of these days.
yeah, that sounds great.
he would love this conversation, you know, being the hair biologist that he is down there in the desert Southwest.
What
you talk about pressure from you guys, I mean, you talked about all the houndsmen there and all the beaglers there. I assume a lot of you guys, is there a lot of public ground? Are you hunting the same spots? You know, are you running into other beaglers while you're out in the woods? Because I assume them rabbits are under quite a bit of pressure, you know, if there's that many houndsmen around.
Honestly, the way it's laid out here, we do have a lot of public land around. And when you do find some public land that is, you know, that is what we call rabbitat, you know, mm-hmm. it's good
rabbitat,
for rabbits.
I like
rabbits.
That.
Yeah. If it's good for rabbits, good for, if it's good cut over, you know, a pine thicket, good broom straw, dog fennel and stuff, mm-hmm. growing in. And if I can find it, somebody else has already found it.
Right.
And so they do get a lot of pressure that way. Now, you got several clubs down here. You know, I call it the final frontier. When you get in this part of North Carolina down towards South Carolina, the population gets a lot thinner. And so you have a lot of big tracts of woods, big 400 or 500 acre cutovers and things like that. And so you get, if you've just got one piece of property, let's just say you've got 500 acre cutdown that you've got leased up for yourself and, or that you own, you cut dogs on one side of it today and maybe another day this week, and then next that time you go to the other side, you're running completely different rabbits.
Yeah.
So you can kind of keep the pressure off of them that way. But like I said, if it's a public place, if I know about it, there's a lot other people know about it as well.
Because you said you're fourth generation. We'll back up a little bit. When you got started doing this, did you immediately know that you're gonna hunt beagles and you're gonna own beagles and you're gonna hunt rabbits all your life?
You know, I don't know that I knew that exactly, but I knew that I love training. That's one thing that I loved. I love training puppies.
Right.
I love seeing a puppy go from just being a puppy to being a rabbit dog. And, you know, we can put a lot of other circumstances on a dog. We can put a lot of other pressures on the dog when it comes to field trialing and things of that nature. But honestly, from the time that pup is 8 weeks old forward, I knew when I was a kid, the way that my dad taught me, my brother and I, how to train a rabbit dog, I knew that that was going to be something that I loved, at least at that time in my life. If you'd have told me when I was a teenager, even in my early 20s, that I'd have still be doing this, I would have believed you, but I would have never believed that the rabbit dog world would be as big as it is today.
Yeah. How much has it changed since, you know, the days when you were young and you were running rabbits with your dad and granddad or whatever? What, compared to today, what are some of the major changes that you've seen in it?
I'm going to tell you the biggest change that I've seen in it is style of dog.
Mm-hmm.
When I was growing up, there was one style of dog, and that was a run to catch.
Right.
Now, we always heard about registered dogs, you know, because we just had great dogs growing up. And we'd always heard about registered dogs, but we didn't have any registered dogs growing up on the farm. We just, you know, we grew up country, you know, we was out there to shoot rabbits, and my dad, he was a big time man. You didn't miss, you pulled a trigger, you better hit that rabbit, you know.
Them shells are expensive.
Yeah, that's right.
So I got a 12-year-old boy that just got another 410 the other day. Trust me, I know they're expensive.
Slinging them out the end like they're free.
That's right. That's what they do.
Yeah. And so one of the biggest changes I'm going to say is just style of dog. And I'll tell you another big change is purpose for owning rabbit dogs.
Mm-hmm.
That you see, so three generations ago, they had rabbit dogs because they were feeding their family with them. Two generations ago, grandfather, raising rabbit dogs, having rabbit dogs, feeding the family. Go to my dad, fed the family some, but more or less was pleasure hunting.
Right.
Then you get to me, I don't even hardly ever shoot.
Right.
You know, so it's definitely not to feed my family. I pleasure run mostly and train and then run competition. So you see how it went from being a necessity for the family for two generations, and then it went to my dad didn't have to do but loved to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got me, and I don't have to do it, but I love to do it. And then I went into competition many years ago. And so it's changed, I guess, like that as well.
I assume the style of dog has changed along with that, like it has with other dog sports.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. So when I was a boy, my dad had a lot of red dogs. Later on in life, I found out, because we didn't know, you know, I didn't know how they were bred, didn't know a lot about them. I was just, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old. As I got older, I found out, you know, he ran a lot of Wolfville Red and later on ran a lot of Wire Creek style dogs that were really good dogs. He always kept a good pack of dogs.
Yeah.
He knew a rabbit dog. He knew what a dog was. He knew what it took to make a rabbit dog. And so that's the style that he ran. And then whenever he did get into a few registered dogs, that's the direction he went. Prior to those years, he had great dogs that, I'll be honest with you, could have been beagles mixed with rat terriers or fives or whatever would get the job done.
Right.
And so kind of even in his life of over many years that before he passed, over the many years of rabbit hunting. So it did kind of evolve a little bit with him. But the major evolution that I've seen has really been since about 2005.
Mm-hmm.
It really changed big time because people started breeding to the front of the pack. And that's when you got a lot of speed started coming in, and people got to going away from, at least in certain formats, not everybody, but in certain groups, I guess you would say, they started breeding to the front of the pack. And so what ended up happening is you had a whole lot of dogs that was reaching out here and grabbing track and running with it, but they sacrificed the hunt in the dog.
Yeah.
By doing that. Well,
you mean they sacrificed, because when you're talking about breeding to the front of the pack, that's the fastest dog. That's the one when you see them go by, they're right behind the rabbit. They're doing the best work on that track, theoretically. That's what they're breeding for. They're breeding for that speed. And then that you're thinking that may have took, you say it took some of the hunt out, maybe took the heart out, or took, you know, the ability to line a rough track out, or maybe bang around on a colder track. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. So they would have big noses, right, where they would kick around a lot of cold tracks, things of that nature. And that they would, when they started breeding to the front of the pack, what happens is when you do that, and I don't care if it's a fox dog or a coon dog or whatever it is, when you start to breed for one trait, you start to lose other traits.
Right.
And so that's what happened. And then there was a big reset. You also seen that over into what I call the Southern bred style dogs, the more like Otis Nip and Rob's Diamond Two bloodlines, some of the more what we call easy dogs. You know, I don't really say slow dogs. They're not my speed of dog, but they took a lot of the hunt out because they got so focused on line control.
Those are the dogs that you see folks walking behind that are all in a line, those type of dogs?
Yeah, they're more lined up, you know. And they're
walkie-talkies is what they always called them up here.
Right. A lot of people refer to them as walkie-talkies, yeah. And they are they were very methodical about how they ran that track together. Right. And so that changed. So then you would go to, you know, to when I was first introduced to an AKC field trial, with that style of dogs, you know, they were going around, you know, slapping the bushes, you know, jump a rabbit, and then they would call the dogs, put the dogs on the track, and then they would run it, and then they would score them based off how they ran track.
Mm-hmm.
That since those years ago, those type days, that has evolved even now to back to the basics of you got to have a hunting dog. You know, you got to have a working dog.
Yeah.
And this dog needs to be able to do everything that it needs. You know, everything you want it to do, train it to do it and breed for it. And that's one of the major things that I've seen change over the years of different ones. And like I said, the run the catch style dog is what I still run today.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the style of dog that suits me the best.
Well, that strikes me as more exciting, you know, the run to catch. And especially up here, the Beaglers that are around my area, that's the style of dog that they have. You know, you're looking at the Lance Wilsons and the Irvin Tafts and the guys like that, and they're looking for the fastest dog. You know, they're wanting something that's, you know, they don't want them making losses or anything like that, but, you know, they're it's just pure speed. And to me, that's way more entertaining to watch. I don't know about anything else, but for an outsider looking in, it seems like it would be a little more exciting.
Right. And it is. And if you and sometimes it takes a little bit of understanding.
Right.
The style. You can take just like, there's a dog down in South Carolina, and he's a track. Hold on. Let me get my mind right. Steele's Wipeout Track Man.
Mm-hmm.
He's a field champion gun dog. From what everything that I understand, he's a good reproducer. He's come from a line of Hall of Fame dogs, and so he's got a lot of background behind him, and so he's producing what people are looking for, and so that style is the direction they're going to go to for that particular style dog. But when you look at that style and you don't know anything about it, you're just thinking, especially if you come from the coon dog world or the fox dog world, and you're used to dogs running and trying to catch, and this is a bit different style of dog.
Yeah.
So you switch over to the other side, to what is referred to as hare hounds. Branco, Northway, dogs from those different bloodlines. Those are your more run to catch style dogs. Now, not that they're going to do it, that they're going to sacrifice any track or do anything any different. It's just going to be a difference in speed and check area and things of that nature there. Yeah. And so it is, when you look at it, you don't understand what the beagle's supposed to be doing. You can say, wow, this is not very exciting.
All right.
But if you understand what they're supposed to be doing and they're doing it and doing it well, then it can be more exciting. So on the outside looking in, it's like I tell people all the time, and I don't ever mean any offense by it whatsoever. When you're young, you like fast cars and fast girls. When you get older, things kind of slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
The only thing that don't change is the dog. I say keep the dogs fast.
Yeah.
And so we kind of look at it that way. And you know, like I said, I don't mean any disrespect to anybody, but that's just kind of the way you look at it. My father-in-law, he is a wonderful man, and he runs an easy style dog. And he and I have run together. His dogs will run, and I can appreciate his dogs and the style that they are and the way that they run. And then, let's see here. I got somebody trying to send him to voicemail. Sorry about that.
Nah, you're fine.
And then when I would turn my dogs out, and here they go and just bust down through the woods and come out looking at a rabbit, and they just tear the whole cutdown down. And they come across the road three wide like NASCAR. He's sitting there scratching his head, you know, like, what in the world are you doing? You know,
coming from the coonhound side of it, though, I can't see how anybody wouldn't be impressed by those style of dogs. I mean, because we're going to correlate speed with track talent all the time. You know, speed is talent, and that's all we're ever looking for is talent, you know? So, I mean, yeah, I assume you would have to have some appreciation for what those dogs do and the other dogs doing what they're bred to do. But when someone sees a dog just really burn a rabbit down, I don't know how they could not be impressed by it.
I agree 100%, 100%. And like you said, there is a talent to be able to run a track and run it at that speed. And, you know, with the more easy style dogs, they're looking at the dog making the turn where the rabbit made the turn.
Mm-hmm.
I tell them, my dogs make the turn. They just hit the exit ramp, loop back around, and grab it.
But, you know, I've seen fast dogs that are really good about staying on track, too. You know, that will make that turn and that will, you know, avoid that loss of some kind, you know, and not overrun a track or something like that, too. I mean, I assume you guys are looking for that as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The easier and the smoother that they can run that track and at the speed. We always say this, and this is what, especially in the fast dog world, I don't care how fast he runs it, as long as he can hold it.
Yeah.
And you get a dog out there to swinging and cutting and arcing out, you know, same thing in coonhound. You're not going to be able to keep that track up to the tree.
Yeah.
So you're not going to be able to circle that rabbit back around to the gun if you're swinging, cutting, and arcing out, because you're going to sacrifice too much track.
Yeah.
So the best, I want them to run it as fast as the scent conditions allow. If they've got a gear down and walk it, you can go on my Facebook page, on our kennel page, and look, and there's videos of my dog's geared all the way down, working across the field, lined up, just nose to tail, going across there, working it. And then they get over into a thicket or over into the pine thicket where the scent's a little better, man, and they can pull that head up and they can drop that clutch, and then they're gone.
Yeah, that strikes me as, you guys want to be efficient. You want them to be efficient as fast as they can possibly run it, but as to be able to slow down when they have to.
Absolutely, and if they can't, if they don't have gears, then they're going to sacrifice. They're going to cause more trouble than they're ever going to help.
Right.
And so we can't really tolerate that. But that's why, going back to the swamp rabbit, this is why I start all of my puppies on those bluegill swamp rabbits.
Yeah.
Because it demands that you be able to run that track. I know they've got the foot. I know the dogs had the foot. They're bred for the foot. So I want them to have the knowledge to be able to that track. And a swamp rabbit demands it because he's going to go out here and he's going to bump his little tail around on the ground. He's going to make little circles, and then he's going to make a big circle, and then he's going to twist and turn and spin and cut back. If that dog wants to, if he really wants to catch that rabbit, he has got to be methodical about how he runs that track. But at the same time, when they're puppies, they're learning how to do that. And so when they're 7 to 8 years old, they've been doing this their whole life. It's just another day in the, you know, just another day on the job.
Yeah. When you talk about, we're going to get in, I want to get into starting pups a little bit too, because I think there's some correlations there with beagles and, you know, other types of hounds, bird dogs, whatever. But what are you looking for physically? Because I assume you're talking about the dogs changing and, you know, you go from great dogs that you say may be mixed up rat terrier or whatever, you know, you guys could put rabbits on the table with. To now, are you looking for certain types of build, feet structure, all that stuff in your dogs too, or are you just whatever gets the job done? As long as it gets the job done, you're good.
Yeah, so you can kind of put that with a race car. When you look at a race car, you can tell that it's a race car.
Yeah,
there's no question about it. You know, I don't care if you paint it black and park it in your yard, everybody drives by your house is going to say, wow, he bought a race car.
Yeah.
And because you can look at it and tell that it is built to motor. Same thing with a beagle. You want the head, the body, the features and everything to look the confirmation to be like a beagle, but you want that, you can see that athletic agility, the ability to cut and move, and you can just tell that they're athletic, you know, even as puppies, once they get past the awkward stage, you can tell that they've got that ability to move and groove the way that you want them to and the way that they'll need to on a track.
Yeah.
And so you're looking for that. And you mentioned the feet. I like a dog that has a smaller front foot with what we call a cat toe.
Yep.
And when he's cat toed, I know that he is light on them feet, and he's going to be able to cut and swing and do what he needs to through the thicket. No matter what that rabbit does, no matter how many sharp turns he takes, he button hooks to the left, to the right, that dog's going to be able to handle that.
Yeah.
I've seen dogs that are bigger built, that are broad across the chest and big legs and things like that. And when you see that, you don't think athletic.
Right.
You think, okay, easy going. Now, not to take anything away from that, because I have seen some of those guys that could really motor too. But when you're looking for it, you want that more. I want that more sleek head. I want that slender, racy body. I want them up high on their toes, and I want that tail up high on their back. And so if you could just imagine a fox dog and just drop him down to 14 inches, and that's what I'm for.
Well, that's what I was getting ready to say. You know, you look at a foxhound, or you look at one of my tree and walkers, which one of them out there, I'm actually looking through the window at my kennel. She don't look very athletic right now. She's got a little too many pounds on her. But, you look at what we look for in something like that, and you pick up a, you know, you get Trader or Shock or one of these dogs out of the kennel, and you look at them and they're long and leggy, and you can tell, like you said, that they're a race car. But I don't think beagles get enough credit for how athletic these dogs actually are, you know, because of their small size. You know, I looked at some of the ones that I followed around, and just the pure miles that they cover at the speed that they cover it in a day of hunting is going to rival just about any hound out there.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. That is 100% the truth. Yes, sir.
Do you ever check your speed on your dogs, on your Garmin?
I do all the time, all the time. Cause I'm always messing with my buddies about it. And I actually run a Dogtra system.
Right. Yeah, I do too.
I ran the Garmin for years. I just decided to go with the Dogtra. And so on the Garmin, a lot of people run, you know, I think probably more people run Garmin right now than the Dogtra, the PF2 systems or the PF1s. The Garmin gives you an average speed. It once you start that hunt, it starts calculating the sitting, the peeing, the walking, the everything, you know, that goes into this, the running, the stopping, the check time, everything is calculated into that average speed. So on a real good day of running where they're just head up, just really stroking, they're running on a Garmin, they would average in between 6.5 and 8.5 or 9.5 mile an hour. What they would average. On the dog trail, on the PF2, it gives you a real time speed. And I've seen mine just the other last day of rabbit season. Matter of fact, my buddy and I, we were all running, and they all run Garmins, and I was running my dog trail. And I told him, I said, you wonder how fast those dogs are running? And he said, yeah. And he said, I hadn't even looked. I said, well, I can show you a real-time speed with this Dogger.
Mm-hmm.
And they were at 32 mile an hour and was holding.
Yeah. No, they don't. These dogs don't get enough credit, especially an athletic beagle, like the ones I assume you're wanting.
Yes, sir.
You know, they can move, and they can really, and just the miles covered in a morning. Say you turn loose 7 o'clock in the morning and you hunt till noon, how many miles them dogs covering?
If it's a really, I'll tell you, for example, last Monday, the day before rabbit season went out, I turned down, I ran 4 hours, and in 4 hours they covered 17.3 miles.
Yep. Yeah. And see, that's you figure one of my hounds, and of course we got to take the time that they're treed, you know, so they're obviously stopping then, but you get 10 to 11, 12 miles on a weeknight. Maybe 17 to 20 if you hunt really hard all night long, 6-8 hours. And just the sheer amount of miles traveled with the beagle is going to surprise a lot of people in the bird dog world, in the foxhound world, and in the coonhound world.
Sure. I mean, that's just like down at my deer club. They run deer dogs down there. We run deer dogs, deer and deer, of course, and those dogs are, you know, they may put in 10, 15 miles, you know, depending on, you know, how big the run is or whatnot, or how many deer that they jump and kill. excuse me. And I tell them down there all the time, say, if you guys really want to run some deer, you need to get some of these beagles right here and put on their hind end.
Yeah.
Because they'll fool you at how fast they can motor a deer or any game through the woods. And you're right, they don't get enough credit. Because people look at a beagle and they look at it as, oh, you know, it's short. It's maybe stocky. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's that. But you take that rabbit from the time he's jumped and he's twisting and turning and going here and going back over his track and doing this and doing that. And these dogs are staying right with him and they're doing all the figure eights and all the zigzags and everything that he throws at them. And then you put 3 miles on that one rabbit, which is about as max as you can do on a rabbit before he's caught,
mm-hmm.
or either he holds up on you. And they do that, and they're all over the place. And you might look at it and you say, well, they covered this 150, 200 yard area, you know, maybe squared. And you say, well, they put in two miles in that one thicket. You know, and that's thicket the whole time in most cases.
Right.
That's a lot of beating that dog takes in a day,
yep.
or on a race. And you get down there to my kennel right now and you get those dogs out, you look at their ears and you look at their tails and look at their flanks, and they're just eat up.
Right.
Now, they run so much, most of them just calloused over, but they're just eat up. And a lot of people see, I run a lot of live videos on my Facebook page, and when the dogs come out and their whole side is just bloody, it's not from the, you know, it's coming from the tip of their tail,
yep.
where they're working going down through there. But people see that and they're like, oh, poor baby's bleeding or whatever. Well, the dog doesn't even feel it. They're not paying a bit of attention because this is what they're bred and built to do.
Yeah.
And it is amazing that their athletic ability. It really is.
Yeah, and them tails, you know how them tails bleed.
Oh, yeah.
And tails and ears, it's a miracle a dog holds that blood. You think they've lost 10 gallon by the time they get done and you get it stopped, it seems like. But it don't bother the dog.
No. You get very few of them that have a medical issue whenever it comes to the tail bleeding. And when it does, we just take it and get it docked, you know?
Right.
that's really the only thing that you can do for one that is a super, what we call a super bleeder.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, and they just take such a beating and they're just so happy to do it. You know, I mean, it's just what they're bred to do. They love to do it. And, you know, it's just like a chicken scratching in the pine straw. It's just what they love to do. It's what they're bred to do. It's instinct, you know?
And I'm thankful for breeders like yourself and those other beaglers that put so much effort into making a true working hunting dog, because everybody knows that there ain't nothing cuter on this planet than a beagle puppy.
And, that's right.
And when those things, we've seen it with poodles, and we're seeing it with some of the other bird dog breeds, you know, the Springer Spaniels and the Brittany's and dogs that were generationally fantastic working dogs and athletic, and then they start getting bred to be pups and the breed just falls apart.
It does. It really does. And honestly, I have many people come here each year to get them a beagle for a pet.
Right.
And I explain to them when they call me and they want one for a pet, I'll be happy to get you a pup for a pet. They make great family pets.
Yep.
But I want you to know, if he gets away from you and something jumps up in front of him, he gone.
Yeah. That's right. And really, for the benefit of the dog, you need to let him. I mean, just let him go. That's what they're there for. That's what they're bred to do.
That's right. That's right. And so much breeding has gone into many, many different kennels and many guys throughout, you know, across the country to their program that they have and what they're breeding for. When you raise that pup up, that pup has no clue what it is that he's going to do. You know, of course, we can't put any human thought process into a dog's mind. But when
correct.
We like to say, well, you know, he's thinking about that, you know, but truly, it's just all instinct for regardless of what the breed is, whether it's a lab or a beagle or a foxhound, whatever it may be, that's just in them. It's just like a tree dog. I mean, if it goes up a tree, it's the instinct to him to tree it up.
Yep.
Whether it's a cat, a possum, a coon, a squirrel, or whatever it may be. And so it's just all about the breeding program and different characteristics that we breed for.
Well, I like to give a lot of credit to the people that have bred beagles over the years, and they're very similar to me because I've had beagle yard dogs. I love having a beagle yard dog to start my coonhound pups with. You know, the dogs they've got plenty of tree in them already. You know, there's nothing wrong with getting out there with that little trashy beagle that likes to run things out of the yard, whether it be deer or coyote or rabbit or whatever, and getting them pups some experience. So I've had a handful of beagles run loose at the house. I've had a couple of gun dogs that I did hunt over when I was younger a lot, but they remind me a lot like, you know, you get a Labrador retriever and you turn it loose, it's going to get things in its mouth and it's going to bring it to you. It can't help it. And the breeders have done such a fantastic job over the generations of making that dog do what it does. You know, you get an English setter out here, it's going to point every bird in the yard. It's going to do that whether you like it or not. And a beagle, if you turn it loose out in the country, it's going to run a rabbit, it seems like. It seems like it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. But there's also so many levels to, especially when you talk about the competition aspect and the side of it. Yeah, I can get a beagle and turn it loose and it's going to run a rabbit, but it's not a rabbit dog. And so how do you take that, all that instinct and drive and gear that these dogs are bred for, and how do you turn it into something that you can win with?
Man, give away all my secrets here.
Yeah, them guys will be beating you here pretty regularly now after they listen to this.
Yeah, no, I always tell my buddies that knowledge is free, just ask for it. And so whenever I'm, you know, well, first off, it goes to your breeding program, just like it did in anything.
Right.
And like, once you do that, I got five characteristics that I breed for. And most guys have them as well. They may not put them in the same order that I do, but the first thing that I'm looking for is brains. I'm looking for a handle, easy handle. I'm breeding for hunt. I'm breeding for control. And then the last thing that I'm breeding for is speed.
Mm-hmm. That's the last thing. That's not the first thing?
No, sir.
Okay.
No, sir. you breed for speed first, you're going to end up with a dumb dog that runs fast.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now that when you put it that way, that makes sense.
Yeah, so if we're breeding for brains, then a lot of the other four characteristics usually come.
Right.
But there's a process, and what I like to refer to as mirror breed. When I take a female and I watch her and I see how she, whether I run her in competition or not, because all of my dogs are hunting dogs, and they, some of them go to competition, some of them don't, but all of them are rabbit dogs. They're all hunting dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Because I say, if you show up to a field trial without a hunting dog, then you're the first loser. And so what I'm looking for when I mirror these two dogs together, I'm looking at their brains. How easy were they to train? How easy are they to control? That goes to the handle. Mm-hmm. All right. And then as they're pups and as they're coming up, I'm watching what is their instinct when I put them on the ground, when they're just, you know, 8-9 weeks old and I put them on the ground, do they automatically drop down and just start hunting? They don't even know what they're doing. They're just smelling and looking, you know,
right.
Certain. And then the control, you don't really know about your control, but if you'll breed two dogs that have really good ability to control that track when they're running, if I breed a male to a female that both of them's got good control, well, there's a real high probability that I'm going to come out with pups that have control.
Right.
And then, of course, speed being the last thing that I'm breeding for. Well, if I breed this dog over here this really good footed and this dog is good footed, then that's the least of my worries. I know that's there.
Yeah.
And so, and let's just be honest, every puppy that we raise is not Einstein. You know, there's coals in all litters and yep. all blood. And so as I raise them up and I'm looking for it, I want to see how quickly they catch on. So then when I make the decision that I'm going to field trial one, I've got a pup down there right now. She's 7 months old. Her name is Winter. And I'm already preparing to get ready to take her to a hunt sometime this summer. Because she's got it. She yeah. just knows. She's you can tell her instinct is to work that track, find that rabbit, work that check out, you know,
yeah.
And keep that track progressing forward. And that's what I'm looking for. And then there's the little bit more. So, you know, you've got a good dog, you got two good dogs, but then you look at that good dog and you say, well, this is a good dog. And that's a good dog. This one over here. He or she, they just got that little bit more. And that's the one that I'm looking to take to the field trial.
Yeah.
Is that right there that's got that little bit extra that can come out of a check when you didn't think they were coming out of a check, or come up with a rabbit when you didn't even think they were going to jump a rabbit, you know. Maybe has had on a good scenting day is just a steady, constant dog. And then on a hard scenting day, is a dog that keeps is smart enough, has got the brains to keep its mouth shut until its nose lets it know that it's able to run this track. So right. That cuts out the babbling and the mouthiness, you know.
Yeah. What and then, when you're talking about when you're talking about brains, I'm going to back up just 1 second because we breed for the same thing. We want brains. Brains are going to overcome everything else aside from heart, and it's hard to get. In the coonhound world, but especially with the PKC hunt, stuff like that, it's hard to get the independence that we require. You know, we want a dog that's going to be alone more often than not, that's going to kind of leave stuff that's going on around him and ignore it, and that takes intelligence. But in that, we have a hard time mentally keeping them holding up, you know, when you're putting all that pressure on them, you know, hauling them up and down the road, taking them to events and stuff like that. Is that a problem with beagles too? Because, I mean, it's hard to get the brains and the drive. Yes, there's a lot of dogs out there that have it, but there's a lot less that don't, you know, on my side of it. So are those two exclusive, or are they easier to combine in the beagles?
No, they're absolutely exclusive. So that's that little bit, you know,
right.
There's a good dog. That little bit is usually equal to the heart. That's that dog that's putting forth that extra mile that's going, it's not, and honestly, it'll be probably your heart, the most hard-headedest puppy you've ever trained.
Yeah, yeah.
Wants to go and go and go, and you've got to get him under control. But you can control him, but you know he's always the one that you got to keep your eye on, because you'll be headed to the truck. Next thing you know, he's jumped a rabbit over here because he slipped out of sight of you, and he's gone out here and found another rabbit. Now he's running again. Now you're you know, waiting 30 more minutes or an hour before you're going to get to load up and leave, you know, or waiting on a down to try to get them called in. So yeah, you're 100% right. It's the same way with the Beagles. And that's that little bit more. The one that's got the heart to carry it on just a little bit further, not taking anything away from the other dogs, and to be able to have that brains, the intelligence, and the heart. And that's the one that you want to carry up and down the road, the one that can handle the pressure. I tell you what I do, and some people will agree and some will disagree. Whenever I get a pup out of the training pen and I run them for the first little bit, you know, to get them used to packing up and doing what their instinct is to pack up and run.
Yep.
That's what
a big
Well, I have a solo program that once I see that the pup has matured enough to that level, I put them on solo time.
Yeah.
They do not get to run with another dog until I see that they can jump and run and hold that track all on their own and they don't need any help.
Yeah.
Now there's a fine line there of getting them to be overly independent.
Yeah.
You don't want them to get overly independent, but you want them to be independent enough so that when you do go to a hunt or you are running with your buddies, whomever you may be with, that this dog is going to run his or her race and don't care what anybody else is doing.
Yeah.
They're going to set a standard, and this is what they're going to run, how they're going to run, because they know what they're doing. And that solo time, it usually takes about 2 months of just pure solo for that one pup, for them to come out on the other side of it. So when I do go to a hunt and these two or three other dogs over here, so I mainly run UKC hunting beagle format.
Uh-huh.
So when they go out and we drop down with four dog cast and these other three dogs decide to go over here and they leave out on a bobcat or a house cat or a deer or something like that, I know mine's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Mine's going to run his own race. He's going to do his own thing. And it's not going to get pulled off. Now, does it happen? Absolutely, it happens to everybody. But at least when I leave the house, I'm not going with a maybe. I'm going with a can.
Yep.
And so that's a big deal as well. So, yeah. And then that pressure, if I decide to go down east, down eastern part of North Carolina is a big, large community down there. They'll run anywhere between 20 to 75 beagles at a time in a rabbit trial.
Oof.
And it looks just like a fox dog. We paint numbers on them and everything, and they score them when they come across that line. Okay.
I got to go see that one of these days. That sounds fun.
it's special. I put on a benefit hunt last year, and I was fortunate enough to get Joy to sponsor that hunt. Joy and JL Elite, where I buy my Joy dog food.
Yeah.
They were gracious enough to sponsor the hunt. It was a benefit hunt for a scholarship program. And it was a 50 dog hunt. We had 49 dogs that showed up that day to hunt. And we turned them loose in a 75 acre cutdown and let it go. And judges, I think we had 12 judges, and they were running around just like a fox dog hunt.
Yeah.
And they're scoring when they come through the line, you know, in different places. And it's something to see. It really is. I had guys jump up to that hunt that are just staunch SPO, you know, UGBF guys.
Yeah.
That are like that, a lot of control and easy dog. I had a lot of them because everybody respects the different style of beagles.
Right.
So it was a good time. It really was. And so there's the pressure. So I can take one of mine. Now, would I take a young dog? Would I take a puppy and put him in that? Absolutely not. He's going to be like, what in the world? It's like dropping a driver so you find your way home. You know,
yeah.
It's going to be too much pressure on them. But as they get older and you still mature, you can actually do that and be able to run different formats with the dogs. That's what I like about the Harehound, the style of dog that I run, is very versatile. It can pretty much under by any weather condition, under any terrain, they can pretty much handle themselves.
That was one thing I wanted to touch on too earlier. We was talking about the competition aspect and the dogs that are bred for it and the dogs that you're training for it and stuff like that. And then we were talking about your great grandfather and grandfather, you know, putting meat on the table and stuff like that. And a lot of people put a big distance between the two, whether it's in beagles, coonhounds, fox dogs, bird dogs, you know, a competition dog and a meat dog, competition dog and a meat dog. But I try to explain to people, especially on the coonhound side of it, is they're both. We still could shoot a lot of coons with these dogs. I'm guessing if you wanted to, you could still pile the rabbits up with yours.
Absolutely. Yeah, no problem. I don't have a dog. I don't even believe in having a dog that is designated for one or the other.
Right.
If you can't do them both, I don't see how if you're not a rabbit dog, I don't see how you ever get the truck to go to a competition for rabbit dogs.
Yeah.
To me, they're the same dog.
Yeah.
I did a live video a few years ago. I had two dogs on the ground, and I think I named the video "Competition Dog versus Meat Dog" mm-hmm. or "Rabbit Dog." And I videoed the whole. It was live video the whole time. And at the end of it, I looked at the camera. I said, "Now tell me which one of them is a competition dog and which one is a hunt dog." Because they're the same.
Yeah.
And if you're designating one to the other one, then they're missing something. Right. And I think same coon dog world, you're missing something. So yeah, absolutely. Now, the difference I would say with my dogs versus my buddy's dogs that they shoot a lot of rabbits, and then I shoot like maybe 10 or 15 a mm-hmm. year. When my dogs hear the gun go off, they're not coming to the gun. A dog that is gunned a lot, when he hears that gun go off, he'll break the track and come to the gun. And whether they hit the rabbit and missed it, they know either way they're going to either be back on the track or either they're going to be looking at the fur.
Right.
So my dogs won't do that because I don't gun over them and I don't train them to the gun. So they're going to continue to run that track.
Yeah.
All the way to the gun. Versus breaking off of the track and coming to the gun. And so
that sounds like a pretty minor difference.
Yeah, it is.
So what do you got going on? What are you looking at to compete in this summer? Do the rabbit events, you say you run every day, do they go all summer long? Do they kind of take a little short break or when it's hot down there or what?
The only time that we take a break is during gun season for deer season. There'll be about a two and a half month break. Mm-hmm. This past weekend, I was fortunate enough to be able to go up to Alan Newby's club up at Lick Skillet Beagle Club up in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And they had their Virginia State hunt up there. So I was fortunate enough to be able to go up this weekend. My schedule, I'm a full-time pastor, and so my schedule's a little different than a lot of people.
Right.
But this weekend, Saturday, me and my buddy Chris, we were able to go up and hunt this Virginia State hunt. And lucky enough, we come out. My Grace dog, she come out with two wins on Saturday. Yes. And my buddy Chris, he come out with a win on that a morning win on his dog. And so we were able to do that. So that was a great weekend. I didn't get to go back on Sunday for the last part or the last day of the hunt. I wish I could have, because I would have liked to see what my girl would have been able to do on the second day, if she would have come out and be a state champion or not. But nevertheless, I was able to have a good time on Saturday, and congratulations. I'd like to say congratulations, Kristen Bundy and her dog, Cooper, I think was his name, that actually ended up with the Virginia State Championship. Wonderful, wonderful dog, smart dog. And so, we had that this past weekend. Coming up this coming weekend is the North Carolina State Hunt up at Randolph County Beagle Club. And so the North Carolina State Hunt, always a good hunt, always a good turnout. And so we got that coming up this weekend. So I'm kind of gearing up, ready to go to that Saturday as well.
Yeah. Are the scenting conditions right now coming into spring after the weather breaks, stuff like that? Because here, this is the best time of year to hunt. I don't know if it's the case for rabbits, but for raccoons, there's no better place or time, I feel, than right here where I'm at in North Missouri in the spring. Is it kind of the same out there? Is that when it seems like the tracks are easier to run?
Absolutely. Yeah. This is puppy training time right now.
Yes.
Get them on the track that they can get. And if you can't, man, you'll find rabbits right now. I'm sure it's like that with coons as well. You'll find rabbits where you didn't even know rabbits would be.
Yep. It's the same way here. You get treed in some places in the spring where you're like, I've never treed in here before. And there'll be a pocket of coons in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I love about from February the 1st for us around here depending on how long Old Man Winter wants to hang on.
Right.
But with those north winds, you know, usually around February the 1st, I generally stop shooting rabbits February the 1st because they start breeding the 1st of February.
Yeah.
And so I don't like to shoot rabbits in February because a lot of them are bred.
Yeah.
Shoot one, you'll fight, you know. And so, but that's whenever I really start gearing towards training and trimming up and getting, you know, and also culling too as well. If I got something that needs to be culled, I'm going to find out in the spring.
Yeah.
As Lord knows, if you can't run them in the spring, you'll never run them in the summer and in the hard winter.
Right.
You know. And so, yeah, absolutely. This is the time here, and this is when our field trial season for UKC Hunting Beagle in this area really kicks off strong about the 1st of February, and then we'll run it all the way till end of October.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of fun doing that.
Well, Mike, I've sure appreciated sitting down with you, and we're definitely going to do this again because I've got just as many questions, I think, now after the first hour than I had before we got started. First of all, thank you for being such a good and loyal Joy customer. It looks like your dogs are doing fantastically on the feed and you're competing with them. And of course, we always love seeing that here at Joy Dog Food. And where can folks find you? You talked about your Facebook page and stuff like that. So where can they see your content?
Yeah, you can see us on our Facebook page, Cottonville Road Kennels on Facebook, Instagram. We've even got some of that TikTok stuff going on.
Oh, hell. You're gonna be a TikTok star. I have to get TikTok now just so I can see it.
Yeah. we've got a lot of video content there, and then also on YouTube. I have a YouTube page. Perfect. I post about one video a week on there, and it's usually it's one day content. Sometimes I'll mix up a few days content on there because editing is not my forte, but I do the best that I can. And so I always do that. And I'll tell you something about Joy. And when I first started, I'll just tell you this. When I first started feeding Joy, I had been, you know, I'm like everybody else. It's been around dogs for long enough. We fed everything.
Right.
I had a guy message me one day. I was just, you know, kind of a little disheartened about the particular feed that I was feeding at the time. And I just wasn't happy. And I really got to studying on dog food and different things. And I had a guy contact me one time out of Kentucky. And he said, "Hey man, if you can get a hope to it," he said, "try some super meal." And I said, "What is super meal?" That's down here. Joy left years ago and nobody around here heard anything about Joy for the longest time. And he told me it was Joy. And I got to looking it up and all, and I done the research. And I'm a kind of person, man, when I do research, I really want to know, you know, I want to really, really see. Well, I went ahead and my first order of Joy was 40 bags on a pallet.
Right.
And so we got it, put it down there in the shop and started feeding it. And this is no joke. This is the truth right here. I went, I had about 3 or 4 days of feeding it. I had a little female that was the kind of dog, when you let her off the truck, she milled around a little bit. She'd go over here, you know, do her business and then go over there. And then she'd mill off down through the woods and she'd jump your rabbit now and again. Honestly, truth, this is no joke. And I've told this story many times. After about 3 or 4 days of feeding Joy Super Meal 3020, she'd come off the tailgate kicking rocks.
Yeah.
And I mean, hit the brush and was gone, you know, and it was just a complete 180 for her. Because I know my dogs, you know, I work them every day. I'm just like everybody else. You see them, you work them, you know how they are, you know how they act, you know when something's wrong, you know when everything's okay.
Yep.
And man, she hit the ground and she was a completely different dog, 100%. And I said, "Wow, this is really good." So I started calling guys. I'm like, "Hey man, it's my sorriest dog is kicking it up, you know, and she's really doing good." And nutrition is a big deal, you know. Right. Usable calories is a big deal. And then that was Lord, I don't even remember when that was now. That was a year and a half, but maybe almost 2 years ago, maybe.
Yep.
And So that following January, when it's toughest, you know, here in January, when the cold is the toughest, you know, dogs burn a lot more calories in the winter.
You bet.
And so it was holding them. I mean, really holding them. So I said, you know what? I'm gonna put Joy to the test. I looked at the forecast. I had 5 days that I could hunt straight that January, and I hunted them all day, just about all day, every day. And when I say all day, from like 8 a.m. to like 4 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
5 days straight in a row, I hunted my whole pack, 5 days straight in a row. And me and that pack, we hit the woods. And I'd have different people with me each day. Whoever was off work or could go, we'd go out. And we were gunning over them. And I was really putting it to them. The thickest, the roughest, everything that you could go to. That week on Friday, when I loaded the dogs up, I looked at the thing. I had put 62 miles on that pack of dogs from Monday to Friday at noon.
Mm-hmm.
And I never had a dog lay down on me.
Yep.
And that is a testament to the nutrition that honestly, and that's where I've been ever since. I said, well, as long as they keep it like it is, I'll be right here.
Well, I know when I signed on with Joy, cause just like you, Mike, I'm a dog man. The dogs come first as far as that goes. Just because they pay me don't have anything to do with what I feed or how I feed. And I told Wade that, you know, whenever I'd signed on, and he said, these are fixed formulas. We're not going to change it. And I love the feed. I'd been feeding it for quite a while. And, yeah, I mean, I was seeing the same things that you're seeing. Dogs that were notoriously picky eaters all of a sudden weren't. Energy levels were up. Kennels were cleaner. You know, the whole works. So, yeah, I got to see the same thing you did before I ever got put on a payroll.
Absolutely, man, and that is just it's such an easy feed to feed.
Yeah,
you know, you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry about your dogs, and especially when it comes to pregnant bitches. You know,
yeah.
Lactating bitches. You know, once they've wept their puppies, and I mean, it's just, man. I just had a litter of labs, and she had so much milk. And because of her diet, you know, leading up to the day for the pups to be born. I mean, it was unbelievable what I had going on. And that, there again, it goes back to the nutrition factors in it. And hey, I tell people about it all the time. And so they can, you know, everybody's got their own choices to do what they want to do. But if they're asking me what to feed and why I feed it, that's why.
Yep. And there's a lot of good dog foods out there, and we're just proud to be one of them.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Yes, sir.
All right, Mike. I appreciate it, buddy. I really do. It's been a pleasure to visit with you. We're definitely going to do this again. I'm going to get my notepad out, and I'm going to re-listen to this, and then we're going to really nitpick on the next one.
Yeah. Get down to the dirty on it.
Yeah. We'll get down to brass tacks on the next one. I can promise you that. But really, yes, really, sir. Really was a lot of fun sitting down with you. Wish you continued success. Remember to look for Cottonville Road Kennels on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, even TikTok. You'll find Mike's content there, and I've browsed through it for the last few months on occasion, and it's really good stuff. I like watching it. So yeah, definitely keep that up, Mike.
Okay, buddy.
All right. Thank you for sitting down with me again, and we'll definitely do this again. Thank everybody for listening. This is the Fueled by Joy Working Dog Podcast, and we will see you next time.
She never die of starvation, although she'll never eat. Maggie, the mother, full of bravery and guts. And always at my feet. Her ribs are showing, her howl is long, but she refuses to die. ever share me.